Committee on Budget. This is the Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources. Today's date is Friday, July 29, 2005, and we are here today for a work session on Senate Bill 247A relating to dispute resolution. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 247A. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate Bill 247 eliminates a sunset on the dispute resolution programs that exist at Portland State University and the University of Oregon. In last session, these programs were transferred to the university system from the Dispute Resolution Commission, which had been a separate state agency and which was abolished during the 2003 session. When the programs were transferred, they were transferred and scheduled to sunset in January 2006. And what Senate Bill 247A does is it eliminates the sunset and continues these programs at the two institutions, Portland State University and the University of Oregon. And what these programs do is they provide alternatives to resolving disputes outside of the court system. This bill comes to you having been approved by the Senate, and there are, though, amendments before you today that are the Senate Bill 247-A5 amendments. These amendments have been approved by both the Senate and House Ways and Means co-chairs, and what they do is the following. The funding source for these programs is a surcharge that is levied on certain court filing fees. These are a dedicated revenue source that under current law and under Senate Bill 247A are dedicated to fund dispute resolution programs and also provide funds for the judicial departments or the courts' mediation and arbitration services. What Senate Bill 247-A5 does is it does not affect the level of these surcharges. It does not increase or reduce them, but it takes the revenue from these surcharges and deposits them instead into the general fund. So these surcharges, along with many other existing court charges and filing fees, would be deposited into the general fund. That's what this bill does. It eliminates the sunset and it changes where the funds are deposited. In the actual budget bills, the Department of Higher Education's budget bill and the Oregon Judicial Department's budget, there are accommodations to allow these programs to be funded by general fund now because they no longer will be receiving these other funds and going to the general fund instead. So Senate Bill 247A5 continues the programs at the same level as they would be without these A5 amendments, but transfers them to general fund programs.
Questions or comments on the LFO presentation of the bill and the A5s, Representative Marsh?
So just to clarify that there will be established in the general fund an accounting line, in essence, to track the money coming in and the money going out? Splashes in.
As with all other general fund revenue sources, we do have information on how much is being collected, and the Judicial Department would continue to maintain data on the amount of dollars that are being collected from the surcharge because it remains a separate surcharge in statute. However, there is no longer a direct connection between those revenues and the funding of the dispute resolution programs. As with any other general fund program, the funding of the program is established by the legislature each biennium through the budget process.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Jensen?
What happens to the money that been from the previous money? What's the tracking on it? What's the rationale? I guess the question I'm asked, what's the rationale for this kind of switch?
The rationale for the kind of switch is that the programs, it's preferable budget policy for these programs to receive funding from the general fund, as do the other programs of the Department of Higher Education, and that the legislature be granted authority in its review of budgets to determine the proper funding amounts to allocate to these programs, as opposed to just having that determined through some type of activity in filing of court cases.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up to this, then, can you distinguish for me the community programs, what it specifically we're talking about, and the public policy programs?
Yes, I may. And if I may refer you to a handout that I prepared when this bill was before the Senate committee earlier. I have not revised this, but the descriptions of the community and public policy programs, there's a short description of those there that would not change under the A5 amendments. If you look at this under the first, second, the fourth bullet, the University of Oregon Law School administers community programs. And what these programs do is they provide mediation services in centers located throughout the state. What these centers do is they help private parties resolve disputes without judicial intervention, and they help train people in providing mediation services. The programs that are located at Portland State are described very briefly in the next bullet item. The PSU Hatfield School of Government administers the public policy program, which has been renamed as the Oregon Consensus Program. And what this does is it works to resolve disputes and to avoid the need for judicial intervention in disputes that involve public bodies as opposed to private individuals or businesses.
Hey, this is the county versus the a county versus the Department of Economic Development.
I think that would be a type of dispute that would be
the public.
Yeah.
Sort
of. That could.
Yeah. In light of this, and this is what I thought, I'm not going to dissent on this bill, but I'm still puzzling over why this is not more appropriately coming out of the same funding that it had before, because it is freeing up the court system. And it is basically a function of, if it weren't for this, the court system would have to be dealing with, might have to be dealing with these if one or the other of the parties, public or otherwise, chose to.
And if I might, Representative, just add my perspective to this, I think that by removing the filing fees as a funding source and substituting the general fund as a funding source, you're taking away from these programs the ups and downs of the filing fees and instead substituting, I think, a more predictable and a flow of money that can be tailored to the needs of the program rather than the other way around.
And I really would appreciate that, Madam Chair, and approve of that. The only thing I would have sought was that previously assigned fees be then transferred into the general fund.
And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay, that's where I was going. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm happy with that.
Representative Shoffler, did you have any
comments? Madam Chair, I answered my question, believe it or not, by reading the bill.
Okay, well, I would then accept a motion to move the -A5 amendments into Senate Bill 247.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried, and I would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 247 as amended to the full Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
I have the motion. Discussion? Representative Marks.
Yes, Madam Chair, I just wanted to state for the record, we've gotten a lot of support for these programs from, for example, the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers, League of Oregon Cities, Association of Counties, Farm Bureau, Home Builders, Association of Oregon Industry, Business Alliance, Home Builders. There's a broad support for this, so I think when they come back in the future for continued funding, we'll find that they're performing a valuable service to the community and to businesses in the community, and I think we'll probably look favorable on funding in the future.
Well, and I also think, too, that as we grapple with trying to have capacity within the system to deal with all the lawsuits, that any that we can get out of that loop and deal with in a fair and just manner, that's a great policy direction for the state. Any further discussion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Jensen, would you consent to carry this one on the floor? And Representative March, would you consent to carry it in the full?
Sure.
Thank you. And with that, we do not yet have the paperwork to proceed with Senate Bill 1037. So I'm first going to close the work session on Senate Bill 247. And we anticipate that the paperwork will catch up with the bill within about an hour. So stay tuned, and you will be getting notification probably by your email when the committee will reconvene, and in that period of time, the committee will stand in recess. Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources. I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1037. And before we take the LFO explanation and recommendation, I would like to ask Mr. Carrier to come forward on behalf of the governor and talk to us about the bill. Thank you very much for taking your time and being so patient in waiting for this moment to arrive.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Carrier. I'm the Natural Resources Policy Director for Governor Kulongowski, and I'm here to encourage you to support these amendments to this bill. Our office and our representatives have had an opportunity to participate in the preparation of these draft amendments. We have reviewed them. We believe that they achieve much in reducing uncertainty and serving to implement the measure as the voters intended. They address the issues of process, judicial review, the issue, the question of authority to waive land use laws, and they provide for limited transferability. I've spoken to the governor personally as recently as today about these amendments, and have advised him that I'm here on his behalf to request your support for these amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee members to Mr. Carrier?
These are the exact same amendments that came out of the committee. That committee would be changed after that.
There have been two draft amendments since they came out of your committee to correct issues that needed to be corrected.
I can't imagine anything wrong coming out of my committee.
I'm sure it was just an accidental oversight.
Further questions or comments for Mr. Carrier? Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, let's have our LFO panelists talk to us about this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have before you Senate Bill 1037C with dash 30 amendments. The bill would create a process under which ballot measure 37 claims for compensation would be handled and also formalize a judicial review process. Section 1, subsection 8A, would allow a state agency that has responsibility for administering a statute to waive enforcement of that statute if it is a basis for a valid ballot measure 37 claim for compensation. Also, according to Section 1, subparagraph 8B, in those cases in which a valid claim for compensation was based on a state statute not administered by a particular state agency, the Department of Administrative Services would be allowed to not apply the statute. Section 1, subparagraph 11, would allow waivers granted by a public entity to be transferable. It would also allow the transferred waiver to remain effective for 10 years after the final waiver decision if the claim was filed on or before December 2nd, 2006, and for 2 years if the claim was filed after December 2nd, 2006. Section 2, subparagraph 3, would allow a public entity to offset some of its claims processing expense by imposing a claim filing fee of amount not to exceed $1,000. Section 9 directs that Section 1 and Sections 4 through 7 would apply to all claims, and this would appear, for example, to make transferability provisions of waivers retroactive to waivers already granted. Section 10 contains an emergency clause and directs that the bill would become effective on passage, and the overall estimate of the bill's fiscal impact is indeterminate. And since the implementation of ballot measure 37 on December 2nd, 2004, the state and various counties have received in excess of 1,100 claims. And I'd be happy to walk through the revised fiscal impact.
Let's go ahead and do that.
Okay. Yeah, sure. As I mentioned, Section 1, 8A and B would, 8A would allow state agencies that have a responsibility for a statute to waive enforcement of that statute. And in those cases where a state statute is not administered by a particular state agency, that would be the responsibility of DAS
to waive or not apply that statute. One of the biggest changes of the Dash 30 amendments appears to be the transferability of waivers, and that's in Section 1, subparagraph 11. And as I said, it would also allow that the transferred waiver would be allowed to remain effective for 10 years after the final waiver decision if a claim was filed on or before December 2nd, 06, and for 2 years if it was filed after December 2nd, 06. Section 2, subparagraph 3, deals with the $1,000 fee that agency or public entity can charge up to that amount to cover the expense of the claims. In Section 9 of the Dash 30 amendments, C 30 amendments, as I said, it directs that Section 1 and Sections 4 through 7 would apply to all claims, and it appears to make the transferability waivers, provisions of the waivers, retroactive to waivers that have already been granted. If you want to look at the second page of this whole, I've basically divided this into two parts. The top part are those agencies that I've heard from this morning since I sent out an email plea with the amendments. So I've heard back from DAS and Department of Land Conservation and Development. Their fiscals essentially wouldn't change by these Dash 30 amendments. I've heard from Dagami. Theirs didn't change. Judicial didn't change. Department of Transportation and Parks and Recreation and cities and counties all indicated that these amendments wouldn't change their prior fiscal. Then I have a line separating those that I've heard from, indicating those agencies I've not yet heard from. And with the exception of LUBA, what we've initially determined is that the Dash 30 amendments wouldn't change the fiscal impact for those agencies. Now, with LUBA, there was one piece of the amendments. I know Harris and I were talking about this earlier.
And Harrison is available for cross-referencing on this.
Oh, it was actually on page 2, line 9. You see the word review at the end of the line there, and before it specified judicial review, and Harris and I were talking earlier the fact that by taking out judicial and leaving the word review, there could be some implications to LUBA that we're not sure about yet because we haven't heard from that agency on the Dash 30 amendments. So.
Okay, but I think it would be reasonable to assume that if the amendments did have an impact on LUBA beyond their capabilities, that the emergency board would be available to them.
Can I ask a question here?
Yes, it's been pointed out that my edit fine didn't catch one change on the fiscal. On page 3, in the bold part, I refer to the C-29 amendments, and it should reflect that these are the C-30s. we've been through so many revisions of this morning that I apologize for that.
There's one more
down at the bottom under LUBA. The second line under LUBA, it also says C29. That should be C30.
And Representative March, you had a question.
Yes. No problem. We've got to get those technical things on the record. In the fiscal for 1037C version, which preceded this, under page 3 for the cities and the counties, it states this bill's impact on cities, if any, is unknown at this time, and the same for counties. Now, you said you didn't get any response back from League of Oregon Cities or Association of Oregon Counties as to any costs, and so that, if I understood that right, then what really this means is not that there is no fiscal, but that the fiscal is unknown.
Madam Chair, Representative March, that's correct. At the time I put that fiscal together, I had not heard from them.
Are you hearing from them now that there is no fiscal, or are you hearing from them now that the fiscal is still unknown, that they haven't heard back from their counties?
It's my understanding that the dash 30s would have no incremental effect on any prior fiscal impact that they. I noticed there's someone from the cities here.
Could we bring Ms. Ludwig forward to clarify this issue for us?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig from the League of Oregon Cities. Madam Chair, Representative March, the issue with the C and Gross version of 1037, the C and Gross version had an expanded ownership provision, and it was estimated by the Department of Justice that increased ownership provision would increase claims, both state, county, and for municipalities. However, it was not estimatable exactly how much those increased would be. Department of Justice at one point estimated it could double claims. So that was why we indicated that in the C and Gross version. And here, we take out that broad ownership provision in the dash 30s. So these will not have any fiscal impact.
Additional fiscal impact other than the regular measure 37. Claim.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
And
Madam.
If you wish, Representative, we could have the counties come forward and clarify.
The same situation for you. Thank you.
Further questions or comments on Representative Krieger?
On our federal page here, section 1 that goes to 11, it talks about would allow waiver if granted by the public entity to be transferable. And then it goes on to say it would also allow the transferred waiver to remain in effect. So I want to use myself an example. If I file and get a waiver before the time period of December, that was 2006, I'm 65 years old. As a member of my family, if they want to exercise that waiver and they inherit my property, are they going to only have the 10 years?
Do we have anyone who's prepared to answer policy questions about this bill? The Representative Krieger, the issue here are fiscal issues. The policy issues you were supposed to have taken care of in your committee already.
I didn't know this had
well,
been
this
changed.
Might have effect.
You know.
Harrison, have you got anything to add here?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krieger, Harrison Conley, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I do believe that as drafted, this language limits the transferability to the 10-year period or the 2-year period. That is, the waiver is transferable, and the waiver remains in effect until the period specified.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Not the way I wanted to hear it. It may have been missed in the, like we did dash 1s through, you know, 3 through 10s and then 12s, and we did our amendments in committee. And I was under the assumption, and that might be my fault, that the transferability issue was going to be addressed. The original landowner and his heirs at a different time schedule and a limit. We really haven't gained a thing now. We can't support the bill as it is. Unless there's a clarification somehow. You want me to talk with
Do you want to have a hallway moment?
I'd like to.
Go for it. You stand at ease. Is there any more discussion around the fiscal analysis or the C-30 amendments to the bill? I would take a motion to move the C-30s into Senate Bill 1037. Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. I would take a motion to move Senate Bill 1037 as amended to the full Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. I have the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Representative Marks.
I just wanted to say this is a sort of a new area, semi-new area of law for me, I'll put it that way. And until I really get to see this all together in a package, think about it more, I may be a no in committee or on the floor, but I'm not objecting at this time.
Thank you very much. Are there any further comments on the motion? And without objection, the motion carries, and I will carry this in full, and I would like to have Representative Garrard carry it on the floor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1037 and adjourn the committee.